Also, I'd just like to extend a deep thanks for being here as well. This is not my first language that I'm speaking in right now, so I hope you bear with me as I stutter through what I've written down here. Like many ceramic artists, I came through the field through making pottery. It was an important entry point for my work. For the first 10 years I worked with clay, I made pottery, functional pots that were meant for use. Through this activity, I came to know the world and understand the things that we surround ourselves with beyond the level of consumption. I got to understand the potential of using functional forms to mediate concerns that lie outside the confines of pure utility. With this realization, my work has changed course over the last 6 years. And as I developed an artistic practice, which I still label craft or Kunsthandwerk, to be more precise and use my mother tongue. Kunsthandwerk, literally meaning art craft, is defined by a studio practice which generates carefully labored objects, formally linked to the objects of utility, but rarely fulfilling that role practically. Kunsthandwerk, therefore, differs from the English language definition of craft, which also could take in a lot of handwork and and surviving vernacular to craft, to quote the British art historian Tanya Harrod. By labeling my work as such, I position it amongst the utilitarian objects at a conceptual level without committing to them practically. In the editorial to the first volume of Journal of Material Culture, Daniel Miller and Christopher Tilley describes how the relationship between persons and things is becoming once again a less autonomous and more fluid one, the cause of which is generally felt to be a rise of commodities, where the sheer quantitative increase is such to constitute a qualitative change in many of our lives. How this qualitative change has disseminated through society is still an open question and a highly contested area of discussion. But it raises the interesting question of what this relationship between objects and people actually is. This basic query has been at the center of my artistic investigation over the last 6 years. At the outset, this concern came into form through a series of objects that merged organic constructions referencing the body with fragments of everyday objects. The work implied a fusion between product and organism, surrounding a person, the body, and object. It set out to question the perceived rigid separation between humanity and our physical environment. If human identity to some extent is informed by the objects with which we surround ourselves, do they not also influence what we become? Thus, the work is a formulation of what happens to common objects when they are assigned symbolic value and becomes more than just their physical selves. This is the essential inquiry was whether human beings and our physical surroundings are transformed in the encounter with each other. Is there a possibility of considering the two becoming a larger entity? In time, I became frustrated with the conventional presentation of this body of work. The objects existed in the gallery space as traditional sculptural objects, usually placed on white surfaces, detached from the reality that they were trying to comment on. People could observe them, but there would be no interaction at the material or practical level. I conspired to establish a body of work that would have a similar relationship to its audience as the utilitarian objects had done previously. Thus, as this previous body of work came to its conclusion, I became increasingly interested in investigating the actual objects we surround ourselves with. This grew from a drive to give the work a literal material presence in the encounter with its audience, a presence closer to how we perceive things in our everyday. Essentially, I was looking for a way of making work that would pertain to the world of things, but not be immediately co-opted into by the world of advertised realities and commercially mediated experiences. I was aiming for a body of work that would be understood and read within the world of man-made objects without being submerged into the haze of consumerability. In a sense, I was trying to map out an area of resistance within the world of things. I was looking for a place where we could meet and deal with objects that could present questions to the wider world of material things. Initially, I began this exploration by nominating abstract objects as functional or furniture, place them in such a way that they would establish a physical relationship with its audience. Certain pieces would have balloons inflated into plastic-looking forms, thus confusing the experience at a material level while encouraging physical interaction. Other work from this period would mimic a functional language. It might appear in some measure useful, but resist any clear relationship to known categories of objects, and thus ask the basic question of what its purpose might be. This evolved into a series of work that had a literal function, mostly chairs or stools, which could be sat on. I wanted to break down the distance between the viewer and the objects fully, to have them engage with the work in a very direct manner. The work was trying to encounter material reading. What does the work do? How does it stand? What does it feel like? But with no fixed relationship to other objects in the world, this reading would remain open. And thus I was searching for an engagement with the work that would parallel how we experience the things we live with every day. My most recent body of work was completed for the exhibition, If All Man's Products Were Well Designed, Joy and Harmony Would Emerge Eternally Triumphant, which opened only 4 weeks ago in Copenhagen. The show consisted of 14 works, all black, installed in the gallery to reference a domestic interior. To accentuate this, a section of the gallery floor was covered by a white carpet. Along the edges of this carpet, strips of black and white ribbons were hung from the ceiling, creating a 10-foot wall around the carpet, enclosing it fully. The show took its form loosely from a reproduction of Kandinsky's picture number 2, an installation/painting from pictures at an exhibition made to accompany a performance of Mussorgsky's concerto of the same name. Kandinsky's intention behind this installation was to create a three-dimensional painting that would be released from the confines of the canvas and become real. I wanted to make a play on this intention by loosely referencing the composition of this work to create a context for the work in form of a stage. To enter the exhibition space, the audience must walk through a wall of satin in order to see the actual pieces. The striped wall establishes a room within a room, a space where the rest of the gallery is constantly present visually and audibly, while creating a sense of intimacy at the same time. The stage was a space that consciously felt marked up, yet established a familiar setting that could contextualize the work within a material world. Inside the curtain, the viewer would encounter a variety of objects, which could be interpreted as functional. To establish a focus on the purpose and meaning of the objects, the same black glaze had been applied to all of the work, thus bringing it together while emphasizing variations in placement and form. The installation design allows the work to be experienced as several tableaus, each advised comparison to a domestic setting. And I just have to say, the next images are actually press images we did for the show, but it's just in order to kind of show how the work was actually placed inside the gallery in a better way, because it was really difficult to photograph in there. In the seminal book, Reading Things, Domestic Objects and the Self, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi and Eugene Rochberg-Holton illustrate how, and I quote, "The objects of the household represent, at least potentially, the endogenous owner of the endogenous being of the owner. Although one has little control with the things encountered outside the home, household objects are chosen and could be freely discarded if they produce too much conflict with the self. The household object constitute an ecology of signs that reflects as well as shapes the patterns of the owner's self." The implication of a domestic setting thus activates a situation that potentially opens a reading for the work, where we can engage with objects at a one-to-one level. The potential of identification in the context of usability, whether implied or real, gives way for a reading of the work that's different from than the one we would have in a traditional exhibition environment. I was looking for something akin to the situation that we have when we experience the home of another for the first time. But in this situation, certain objects would have the potential for reading as functional items, recognizable without suggesting a specific purpose. Others would seem more ambiguous, clearly belonging to the world of things, but not fitting to any fixed category. It's not an easy read, and purposely one that does not add up. Some of the objects are in conflict with each other formally, others destabilize themselves by ambiguity. Thus, my work, in a sense, negotiates the space between the ideal and the pragmatic object, clearly referencing functionality and implying use, while at the same time resisting the inherent utilitarian potential for a move beyond the cerebral engagement. They exist as an extension of the category of functional objects, but do so without achieving this basic requirement of any functional object. Sorry, I'll do that one again. I think I missed that one. They exist as an extension of a category as functional objects, but do so without achieving the basic requirement of any functional object, namely to fulfill a practical purpose. The space of the work is not a space that sculpture traditionally occupies. These objects should not be understood as autonomous works that point toward a definite meaning. And that's kind of shown as well with some of the images that I've shown here. I show the work in different ways. So in the gallery space here, you can see those kind of chair outline kind of things that are upside down inside the gallery space. But at other times, I'll show them just kind of standing around as normal chairs. They kind of have this life that goes on by themselves. And so there's not kind of a prescribed way of showing things. Instead, they suggest the potential and relate to objects that already exist, yet defy to be read as such only. I consciously seek out the state of ambiguity when I make work in the studio. It's an important mediator for the underlying discussion of our relationships to objects and how they inflict on our lives. The ambiguity is a means to create a space in which the viewer can approach and meet the work without necessarily having to understand the artist's mind. They therefore sit within the trajectory of Kraft or Kunsthandwerk, being objects that speak about other objects while debating and commenting on our relationship with them. The conclusion arises when the work is paired with the viewer's understanding of the rest of the material world and is thus not a prescribed one. So that concludes my talk. If you're interested in seeing more work, I've got a website. I've got a few shows coming up as well. Thanks very much.